Well, we take up our series then in Exodus chapter 16. You remember that in chapter 14, the children of Israel finally got out of Israel. Pharaoh and his chariots and his soldiers were all drowned. And then we came into the beginning of chapter 15, and we found that they worshipped. Song of Moses, we're reminded of that this morning, and in the pre-service prayer meeting, we were just looking at that song. Moses and the people gave thanks because they'd been released from prison, captivity as it were, there in Egypt. And they were now free. And of course, as chapter 15 unfolded, we went on and we found that they came to Marah. And there the water was bitter. And in verse 24, the people began to murmur against Moses. And then in verse 25 of chapter 15, Moses prayed, and the Lord showed him a particular tree which would make the water sweet, and sure enough, the water was made free, sweet. And God made a promise to the people of Israel there in verse 26 that if they would follow him, if they would do his will, then he wouldn't bring any of the plagues that he brought upon the Egyptians upon them. They would be a special people. He would watch over them. He would protect them if they would keep his law. Cling on to that because it's going to be relevant as we move on. And God brought them to Elim, right at the end of chapter 15. In verse 27, they came to Elim, where were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. They camped there by the waters. After Marah, now they had sweet water, 12 wells of it. And of course, there were then the 70 palm trees, date palm trees, an oasis in the desert. After Egypt, how wonderful. You can imagine it. Here they were. They'd got an oasis. They'd got water, sweet water. They'd got palm trees, date palm trees. And they could put down roots. They could make themselves comfortable. The sort of comfort they'd never known in Egypt. They'd come into a special place. And then we come to our passage tonight. And in verse 1 of our passage, and they took their journey from Elim. They took their journey from Elim. They had to move on. And all the congregation of the children of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of land of Egypt. Just 6 weeks after they'd been in captivity in Egypt, they were now on their way. On the way out of Elim and into the desert. God was moving them on. You know, they'd just been so comfortable in Elim. After Egypt, And all the hardships of Egypt. And they've only just arrived at Elim. 6 weeks after they left Egypt. And they've got to move on again. Can you imagine how they would feel about that? We were just getting comfortable. We were just putting some roots down. But they had to move on. And you know, there are times for each of us when God says to us, it's time to move on. And maybe we're feeling pretty comfortable. We've put some roots down. And things are just about settling down. And we begin to feel that, things are not too bad. And then something happens. Something changes in our lives. We've got to move on. And we're reluctant, aren't we? If we're honest. We don't want this development, with our health, with our employment, with our education. No, we'd rather stay where we were. And here's God moving us on. But you see, there was a promised land that Israel had to get to. And for us, there's a promised land we have to get to. We've spoken before, haven't we, of that parallel between Israel in Egypt, coming out of Egypt, their conversion, traveling through the wilderness to the promised land, like believers traveling through the wilderness of this life to heaven, mentioned this morning. And so there's a parallel here. These people, they have to move on. And they resent it. We're going to see they murmured. They murmured. And we have to move on. Because like them, we're on a journey. Remember Hebrews chapter 11, the heroes of faith? They searched for a city whose builder and maker was God. That's the story of the believer. So then, as we look at this passage, I want you to notice the theme of murmuring. Verse 2, the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Verse 7, and in the morning when ye shall see the glory of the Lord, for that he heareth your murmurings against the Lord. Verse 8, halfway through, for what the Lord heareth your murmurings, which ye murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. Verse 9, at the end of the verse, for he hath heard your murmurings. Verse 12, and I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. You got the message? This is about murmuring. The Lord's people murmuring. That's the theme of this chapter. What happens when the Lord's people murmur? Whether it's Israel having to leave Elim, so comfortable a place, so soon, we just got comfortable. Whether it's you or me, as something changes in our lives, and we don't feel ready for this change. We don't want to move on. That's the theme of this passage. What happens when the people of God murmur? How does God deal with it? Well, I've got five divisions, and it's rather a complicated passage, as you'll see. But I've got five divisions. The first one, verses 1 to 5, is Moses and Aaron trying to warn the people. And it's rather like a reporter writing in the newspaper of the events that took place. It's a sort of abstract of what's going to be seen in the rest of the chapter. It's an overview. And what we shall see in these first few verses, in verses 1 to 5, is something of the characteristics of people that murmur. Some of the things that we do, all of us, when we're dissatisfied with some development in our lives and we feel this is wrong, I don't want to go in this direction. Some of the characteristics then will come out in that first passage. And then we have verses 6 to 12. A passage in which there are repeated efforts to try to correct the people. Talk some sense into them, if you will. Moses and Aaron repeatedly trying different ways to try and get the people to just see the situation logically. As we shall see, they're distorting the situation, making of it something which it's not at all. And we find in that passage that God becomes involved too in seeking to correct Israel and in their thinking. And during that time, God makes a promise to Moses in his mercy. Here are these people murmuring and dissatisfied, and in that situation, God even promises them that he's going to provide for them. And then verses 13 to 18, God does provide the quails and the manna, and we'll say something about that. And then in verses 19 to 30, God proves Israel. Remember in chapter 15, I said, just notice, God had made that promise after the events at Marah, that if the people of Israel would keep his laws, then he would spare them from all of the trials of Egypt. But here, God is going to try. He's going to prove Israel to see how they're going to respond to his provision. Here he is providing for them meat and bread in the wilderness. How will they respond? And then in verses 31 to 36, God says essentially to Moses and to Aaron, this is something that needs to be remembered. This is a memorable thing, a memorable lesson that's been worked out here in the desert. And it's going to be a memorable lesson for each one of us, I trust. Something for us to remember when we feel disposed to rebel against God moving us on into new situations. Well, let's begin then with this overview, verses 1 to 5. An overview of the events of this chapter, and an overview in which we see something of the characteristics of people who are murmuring, that theme that runs through this chapter. Israel, the people of God, murmuring. You look at verse 2. The whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Notice something very important here. They do not murmur against God. And when things change in your life that are unwelcome, you don't murmur against God either, do you? Well, he wouldn't be right, would he? Oh, no. And we look around ourselves, who can I blame? It's not me, of course. It's one of these other people that's caused this problem. And here are Israel. And they're looking for scapegoats. Who should we blame? That's the first thing that we notice about them. And then we look on and come to verse 3. The children of Israel said unto them, would to God that we had died at the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to our full. For ye have brought us forth into the wilderness to kill the whole assembly with hunger. They blame Moses and Aaron for bringing them out of Egypt. Is that really what happened? They blame Moses and Aaron for bringing them out of Israel. And they make this remarkable statement at the beginning of the verse. Would to God that we had died by the hand of the Lord. I wish I was dead. I can't put up with this new development. I've had enough. You've heard people say it, haven't you? You know, when things go wrong, I can't put up with this. I wish I was dead. Really wish they were dead? But it's the sort of thing that people say when they get into this mold of complaining. I don't want to move on. Why is this happening? Who can I blame? Oh, life isn't worth living. Notice the next thing. There's no gratitude to God. There's no gratitude for bringing them out of captivity in Egypt. No gratitude for sparing them as they crossed the Red Sea, even though Pharaoh and no chariots, they were all drowned. No gratitude for the way in which he'd provided for them at Marah and then at Elim. No gratitude for anything. And isn't that again like us? When God moves us on and something happens. We don't, what does the old chorus say? Count your many blessings, name them. No, we don't think about that. I'm taken up with what's gone wrong and who I'm going to blame. No gratitude. No counting of past blessings. Focus entirely on what we feel has gone wrong. Notice, too, that they're complaining against God. They don't say we're complaining against God. They complain against Moses and Aaron. But repeatedly, as we go through this chapter, you're going to see shortly that it's actually God they're complaining about, because he stands behind all of these things. And then notice how they exaggerate the comforts of the past. Remember in verse 3, the flesh pots of Egypt. Oh, that land of plenty, all the flesh we wanted, and bread in abundance. The children of Israel said unto them, would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. That really what it was like when they were in captivity in Egypt? You remember how right back at the start, in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 7, God is meeting with Moses in the wilderness, and we read this, the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. Where are the flesh pots? Where's the bread in abundance? You see, these are the characteristics of people who are complaining. Complaining when they're moved on. Dissatisfied. We reach out for people we can blame. Not God, although actually that's who we are complaining about, but we don't acknowledge that. And we exaggerate the wonders of the past. Oh, I wish I was dead. I can't cope with this situation. The sorts of things that people say. The sort of things that sometimes go through our mind when we're dissatisfied. Now let's see how graciously God provides. He's going to provide for them. In verse 4, then said the Lord unto Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day. Going to rain bread from heaven. Remember how they were talking about the flesh pots of Israel of Egypt and eating bread to the full. Well, says God, I'll show you what full is. I'll show you what it's like to be full. I'm going to rain bread from heaven. Can you imagine? I'm just going to... I'll show you what plenty is. You haven't seen anything. What mercy? From a God who's been offended and they've been criticizing, really, they won't acknowledge it, but they're criticizing him for what's happening in their lives. They directed at Moses, but it's really God. But then notice, and we'll come back to this later on, towards the end of verse 4, he says he's going to feed these people that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. I'm going to test them. Again, I remind you, in the previous chapter, God said, if they will keep my law, I won't bring any of the plagues of Egypt upon them. Now he says, now I'm going to test them. I'm going to prove them. As I bring these mercies to them, the bread each morning and the quails at night, I'm going to bless them in a remarkable way. In what they think is such an adverse situation, I'm going to bless them. But I'm going to watch to see how they respond to my grace, my mercy. So there's the overview of what's happening in this passage. And there's a message there for each one of us. When something happens in our lives and we don't like it, God is moving us on. Not that person we want to blame, not some circumstance. God is on us. This thing that's happening is in his hand. And if we're going to complain about it, let's remember that it's against God that we're complaining. He has allowed this thing to happen in my life. Let's remember, too, that we're prone to exaggeration. Oh, the wonders of the past. Everything was perfect. Flesh pots of Israel, of Egypt. And we do that too. We exaggerate the past for its comfort. And then we exaggerate the discomfort of the present. I wish I was dead. Characteristic of people who complain. And God responds to that in grace, providentially, but he watches to see how we respond. That's the seriousness of this message. How do we respond when in his mercy God providentially releases us from this circumstance or that circumstance that was unwelcome when it first came? How do we respond? God hears our complaints. And when he acts in mercy, he watches to see how we respond. That's the overview of this passage. Now, let's come on to our next section, verses 6 to 12. What do you say to complainers? And as I've already said, Moses and Aaron and even God himself become involved in trying to talk some sense, as it were, into these people of Israel. Verses 6 to 8. Moses and Aaron in verse 6 speak to Israel. Verse 8, Moses speaks to Israel. Verse 9, Moses gets Aaron to get all the people together because he says, God has heard you complaining and he knows that it's against him. Although you say it's against me, Moses and Aaron, he knows that it's against him that you're complaining. Now come together and God is going to speak to us. And God makes a promise to Moses that he's going to feed the people. Let's notice the skeleton of these various remarks that are made in these various occasions in these verses 6 to 16. First of all, verses 7, 8, 9, 12, God hears you complaining. That's the message that's being spoken to these people. We saw it in the overview we were talking about a few minutes ago. God hears them complaining. And God sees that it's a complaint against him. They're told this, they're warned. This is part of the warning. God can hear you. And you're going to learn that God brought you out of Egypt, not Moses, not Aaron. The lesson for us, God hears what we say. And then secondly, God shows them his glory. You look at verse 10, after Moses has told Aaron to draw the people together, then it came to pass, as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel, Moses had told him to bring them all together, that he looked towards the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. Notice it's the cloud. This is the fiery, cloudy pillar that was leading them. And the glory of God appeared there in the cloud. They're reminded, with all their superficial embroidery of the situation and blaming of each other and so on, they're reminded there is a God and he's on the throne. A reminder to us too. We have our difficult situation. There is a God. He's on the throne. And so they're reminded. God shows them his glory. And then, graciously, he promises them flesh to eat. Verse 12. I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel speak unto them, saying, at even they shall eat flesh, and in the morning ye shall be filled with bread, and ye shall know that I am the Lord your God. What mercy. Here are these people complaining, bitter, distorting the facts of the situation. God in mercy provides for them. He promises them, I'm going to provide for you All that you need. More than you could ever imagine. See what God is saying. He reminds them he's on the throne. And he's saying, now trust me. Trust this promise. And that's something that we have to do. And things go, as we would say, wrong in our lives. And we're tempted to blame others. God is on the throne. And we have to trust the promise. This great promise is given to Moses by God. And he's got all the people assembled. And Moses is able to say, God has given me a promise for you. You've got to trust that promise. Well, then let's come on to next section. God provides. God keeps his promise in these verses, 13 to 18. God keeps his promise. And of course, we read that he provides manna and the quails. Tremendous efforts have been spent trying to find out what this manna is. And there have been all sorts of possible explanations. One of them is that it's liquid honeydew, which is the excretion of cicadas plant lice, sort of lice that live on the cicadas plant, the various excretions that solidify in the sunlight. But it's not really very satisfactory. But the real miracle of the manna, the real miracle of the manna, is the timing of it. Every morning, except the Lord's Day. Every morning. And then look at the end of the passage, verse 35. And the children of Israel did eat manna 40 years until they came to a land inhabited. They did eat manna until they came unto the borders of the land of Canaan. What an amazing, a miracle. Worked out over 40 years. But you see, God had promised. A promise that God made to Moses. Tell the people, I'm going to provide. In more abundance than they could ever imagine. You talk about the plenty of Egypt. Nothing compared with what I'm going to provide, says God, through Moses to the people. And for 40 years, every morning, except the Lord's Day, there was this provision. There's a miracle. And then we come to the quails. Now, quails are known to fly mostly by night. It's not surprising that they were found in the morning. And they after they've been flying, they're so tired and so weak that they fall to the ground and you can just pick them up. They don't have the energy to run away. And they travel on the wind. And it says he caused a wind to bring them in. And what's more, it's known that that quails do exist in the Sinai Peninsula. They're known to be there. But again, the real miracle is the quantity. I take you to the book of Numbers. In chapter 11, we have another account of the way in which the people of Israel complained, and Moses went to the Lord about it. And then in verse 31, we read about the quails. And this is what it says in Numbers 11, verse 31. And there went forth a wind. I said that they traveled on the wind. There went forth a wind from the Lord and brought quails from the sea and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side, as it were a day's journey on the other side, round about the camp, and as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. 2 cubits high with quail. Now, isn't that amazing? They talked about the flesh pots of Egypt, and God says, I'll show you what plenty is. 2 cubits high with quail. Two miracles then. God had said to them, I will provide. Trust my promise. You see how abundantly God keeps his promise to these people. And that brings us then to verses 19 to 30, where God proves Israel. Remind you of the end of verse 4. God says, I will do all these things that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. God is now going to prove them. He's going to test them. Now, what's he looking for? What is this test? The question is, will they stop grumbling? Will they acknowledge and be prepared to live in daily dependence upon me? Day by day, the provision is made. Are they prepared to live in daily dependence upon me? And there's a question there for you and for me. When things go wrong, when we're tempted to grumble, like the children of Israel did, God makes us promises. And here's the question. Are you willing to live in daily dependence upon God, upon his promise? Stop your grumbling, pretending it's that man or that woman or that circumstance. No, all of this is in God's hand. God has made promise. Are you willing to live by the promise that God has made for his people? Day by day, they went out and gathered. And day by day, we have to live independent upon God's promises to us. Ah, but then there's another aspect. There were no provision on the seventh day. What is that? Well, if the quails and the manna had been there every day, 24/7, you know what people would say? Well, it's natural. It's a natural phenomenon. Like the sun comes up every morning, it goes over. And people don't believe in a creator. They say, no, it's natural. It happens. But here was a provision that stopped every seventh day. There's something different. And the difference is that this is the day of rest. This is God's day. So week by week, not only are they provided with daily food, but week by week, they're reminded that there is a Creator and that he is in charge. Let me remind you of Genesis chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. And we're told here in this passage that this was a gift. This day of rest, this seventh day, was the day God had given them. In the Ten Commandments, observation of the Sabbath is a command. But here it's a gift to remind them week by week, this isn't a natural phenomenon. This is the God who is in charge, who we're told in the New Testament upholds all things by the word of his power. He didn't just make the universe. He upholds it by the word of his power. And he's the one who made these promises to provide for you. He's the one who you must depend upon day by day. The one who's on the throne. The challenge then, I say, for you and for me, to live a life of faith. And then we come to the last few verses of the chapter, verses 30 to 36. They are to remember. Remember, we read verse 30, so the people rested on the seventh day, house of Israel, called the name thereof manna, and it was like coriander seed white, and the taste of it was like waters made with honey. And Moses said, this is the thing which the Lord commandeth, will an omer of it to be kept for your generations, that they may see the bread wherewith I have fed you in the wilderness when I brought you forth from the land of Egypt. This lesson which Israel had been taught there in the wilderness was so important, it needed to be remembered. And you remember that a pot of this manna was put in the ark, in the tabernacle. And it stayed as a perpetual reminder of the way in which God had taught Israel that when things go wrong, He's still on the throne. They're not to murmur. It's not the fault of the circumstance or the people around them. God is at work. But He's made promises. And we're to live day by day, resting upon the promises of the Creator God, who still upholds all things by the word of His power. But just as we close, I want to just change gear entirely and want to take you to John chapter 6. Remember that one day the crowds came to Jesus and they wanted a sign. How would He give them a sign? And in verse 30 and 31 we read this. They said therefore unto Him, what sign showest Thou then, that we may see and believe that Thou doest this work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, He gave them bread from heaven to eat. And in verse 35 we read this. Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. There's that same provision. Manna for our souls, daily coming to Him, pleading the promises, resting upon them. That's the life of faith. And that's what God wanted to see in Israel. And He wants to see in you and in me, if we call ourselves Christian. Verse 51 of John 6. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of the bread, he shall live forever. The bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. The gospel. The life of faith. Day by day. Depending upon the Creator God. Glorious promises to those who will. Let's all pray. Our gracious God, we acknowledge that we have much to learn about the life of faith. And we see the challenge that comes to us through the experience of the children of Israel and the lesson that's to be remembered down through the ages, that Thy people are to walk day by day the life of faith, depending upon that daily feeding, that manna that Thou dost provide. So, Father, we pray that Thou would help us to record these things in ourselves, in our own minds, that as we have our times of difficulty, that we might remember that Thou art upon the throne, and there are exceeding great and precious promises for those who will live the life of faith. So we thank Thee, Father, for Thy graciousness, Thy long-suffering with people such as we are, in our Saviour's name. Amen.